We're ready. Good morning and welcome to Sage Health On Call, an ongoing series of live conversations about alternative medicine and natural therapeutics. I'm your host, Robin Tawney. I'm a counselor and body worker in private practice and an instructor at the New Mexico School of Natural Therapeutics here in Albuquerque. Our topic today is integrative medical practice. In other words, medical practices that combine conventional Western approaches with complementary and alternative approaches. Our guests today are Dr. Stephen Wise, a family practice physician who incorporates homeopathy, herbs, nutritional supplements, Ayurveda, natural hormones, craniosacral therapy, and emotional and spiritual counseling into his private practice. And Dr. Jeff Solins, an internal medicine physician who is the founder of Bridges in Medicine, a healthcare team of over 20 conventional and complementary healthcare practitioners. Both doctors practice here in Albuquerque. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Robin.
Thank you.
Steve, let's start with you. Could you describe in more detail how you incorporate both complementary and conventional medical practice?
Sure. Well, I've been in this field for over 15 years now, and I got my training at the University of Maryland Medical School and followed that with a three-year residency in family practice at the West Jersey Hospital in Voorhees, New Jersey, in family medicine. And even before I began my training in medical in Western medicine, I was interested in the alternative or complementary medical approach. I grew up in Switzerland, and it is there that I was first exposed to the complementary medicine. I actually became interested in it because of some health problems I was having at the time, and I first began to get interested in yoga, went to a talk on nutrition, and then finally began meditating regularly back in Geneva. And the meditation group I was involved with, you incorporated a number of complementary techniques into the meditation group, actually. And there were a number of homeopaths involved with this group and other acupuncturists. And so this was before medical school in 1981, 82. So I became very, very interested in these different approaches and in a more natural way of living. And I received homeopathic treatment myself, and also became a vegetarian then, began meditating regularly, and found this to be extremely helpful to my own well-being and really helpful in all ways. So when I went to medical school at University of Maryland in 1983, I was already extremely interested. And I became the president of the Holistic Health Club there at the university. And so really from day one of my training, I began incorporating these different techniques. And I took every opportunity I could to do electives in complementary and alternative medicine. And so I made numerous proposals to the University of Maryland and to my residency to incorporate natural approaches, and that includes yoga therapy and homeopathy, acupuncture. I did a number of electives, and so gradually I realized that this was where I wanted my practice to go. So after I graduated from residency, I began more in-depth training in various techniques, and that includes classical homeopathy, which is one of the main approaches I use in my practice, Western herbal medicine, and Ayurvedic medicine, and also the spiritual and emotional counseling and vitamins and minerals that you just discussed earlier.
How do patients come to you in terms of, are many of them like left out of the system, so to speak?
To a certain extent, I think that's correct. I think I have a number of different kinds of patients that consult me, but many of them have had some difficulty with the conventional system. Either they didn't get the kind of care, they didn't get help for their problem. That's a large number of my patients were not helped with conventional medicine, or they were actually degraded or demeaned by the physician and actually had a very bad experience with conventional medicine. Those are probably the two main populations. But then there's just people who really see the value of using both types of medicine and feel that it's probably the safest way to go, and it offers the most likelihood of cure. And so it's people who are well educated often, who have done their reading and their research, and realize that combining these two different approaches is the safest and best way to become healed and to receive health care.
Well, let's back up just a minute. Jeff, obviously Bridges in Medicine is a team approach rather than a single individual. How does that work?
Well, Bridges in Medicine was actually begun in 1997, Robin, but I'm going to back up a little bit to tell you how my interest started in this and how Bridges
Please.
Developed. Interestingly enough, when Steve and I met a couple of years ago, it wasn't until this recent conference at UNM when we both realized we both went to the University of Maryland and had some early similar experiences with people in holistic and spiritual healing. I also trained at the University of Maryland in the 70s and trained in straight internal medicine. At that time, I had an interest which had been going on for probably 15 years in music. And my interest in music really led me to some understandings about energy. At the time, I didn't know how to make the connection between music and energy and medicine. But I think that those were the seeds that started the whole process. I can remember, interestingly, in the late 70s, we had a speaker at the time named Dr. Andy Weil, who came to the University of Maryland. And his topic was something along the lines of, can hallucinogenic drugs be used in a social context or recreationally? Well, needless to say, in those days, I had long hair and a beard. And myself and my three students went to this conference. And we were the only people who showed up in the lecture hall. So after the lecture, I went up to Andy and made friends. And he invited myself and another friend of mine to come down and stay at his house for about a week. And at that time, that was sort of my first introduction to holistic medicine from a totally different context. I finished my training at the University of Maryland and came out to New Mexico in 1977 and did emergency medicine for almost 10 years and found out that there were really issues involved with patients where, similar to what Steve had said earlier, we were treating the patients as a disease process. We sort of disconnected. I mean, someone came in and they had a problem with their arm, they became the arm. If they had a problem with their knee, and Steve will relate a nice story in his experience a little bit later, they became the knee. And I think that we forgot that the pathology wasn't the person. About 1986, I went back into straight internal medicine. And during that time, I also recognized that patients were not really getting what they needed. We didn't really have much time to talk to them, and it was basically come in, get your medicine, get your drugs, and move on. And so I had this idea about putting on what I call a mini symposium, and that was in February of 1997. And at that time, I gathered about 50 practitioners from conventional medicine, from holistic medicine, from complementary medicine, and back at that time, we were using the term alternative medicine. I had neurologists sitting down next to curanderas. I had gynecologists sitting next to shamans. We had internists. We had family practitioners. We had Reiki therapists, yoga therapists. The conference went really great. And so what we decided to do after that is I put together a team and started asking the question, what would happen if we took some complicated patients and put them in a multicultural, multimodality environment and treated the patient, all of us, simultaneously. So basically, I broke the team down into four major areas, what I would call energetic medicine, which at that time was the major modality was acupuncture, oriental medicine, mechanical medicine, mostly chiropractic, spiritual medicine, and then conventional Western medicine. So just a real short example, the first patient who went through was a patient of mine for about 4 years and was a patient of my previous partner for about 10 years. Basically a healthy gentleman who had chronic sinusitis. And probably in the 4 years that I knew him, we put him on major courses of antibiotics multiple times throughout the year. So we put him through a 90-day program of Bridges in Medicine, which incorporated those four modalities. And we also at that with this particular individual, we had someone doing therapeutic touch and chakra work. In 90 days, he essentially finished his program. I've seen him since 1997. We've had him on one course of antibiotics in the last 5 years. So essentially, he just revamped his lifestyle, revamped his health care, and he hasn't been sick.
So, what a marvelous story.
Yeah, so from that point on, we essentially thought, this is a good idea. So we took Bridges in Medicine and expanded on the concept.
So am I right in assuming that this is the way the team works now, that a patient comes to you and then they're assessed by the team and it's determined as to which practitioners of whatever modalities would be most appropriate?
The easiest way to explain it is that the patient first comes. There's sort of five key concepts to Bridges in Medicine. The first is that you have an MD or a DO, conventional or Western medicine evaluation. The patient is required to fill out a comprehensive integrative healthcare profile, which is about 30 pages long. There's also an area we call the personal story, and that's a really important one, where the patient describes to us how this disease process has affected them. In conventional Western medicine, Steve and I normally were taught that if someone comes in, well, you had such and such an illness at this date and you went to this hospital and this was your doctor. By asking the personal story, we're asking the patient, what did it feel like sitting across from that doctor? Mm-hmm. Much like Steve had mentioned, did you feel intimidated? Did you feel like if you told your story that you would be laughed at, someone wouldn't really believe you, that they would tell you it was in your head? So it's a chance for them to really, in a kind of a poetic fashion, tell how their disease affected them as a human being. The fourth concept is the TEAM, which stands for Trained Experts in the Art of Medicine. And finally, the fifth concept in Bridges, which I think is critical, is that we have an integrated medicine chart so that all the practitioners can speak with each other in the same language. Generically speaking, if a person came and said that they had a Qi3 deficiency, as a regular internist, I would have no idea what that meant. Probably the chiropractor wouldn't know what that meant either. But if the doctor of oriental medicine / acupuncturist then says that means Mr. Johnson is constipated, we all understand the same language.
Right.
So the chart is broken up into the same four categories. So that way anyone can look at it from any perspective. And because Bridges in Medicine, fortunately, is the only Medicare-approved program of its kind in the country, because of Medicare audit responsibility, everyone has to be able to look at the chart at any time and understand what's happening with the patient.
Well, if you've achieved nothing else, I think simply having a common language for various modalities is a major accomplishment, because communication between the different disciplines is very problematic.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, everyone gets along personally, but it's when you start putting it into the chart that you wonder, what does it mean when someone has a subluxation? Mm-hmm. Even today, I'm not sure I understand that, right. But I still go to the chiropractor.
Well, could you both share some? You shared one very outstanding case history. Could you each share some case histories that show perhaps some of the limitations as well as the benefits of combining the alternative with conventional approaches?
Sure. I can start or continue where Jeff left off. I actually would like to give a couple of case histories, one that of classical homeopathy that is actually more a pure complementary approach, and then one of a patient that I've been seeing where I use both medicines. So the two classical homeopathy examples that I'm going to be sharing with you are ones that I gave at the conference, the recent conference here at the University of New Mexico. One had to do with an elderly gentleman in his 80s who I was actually working at the urgent care center one weekend up in Santa Fe. And I had just, I really hadn't completed my training in classical homeopathy yet. I was quite a novice. And I received a call in the middle of a busy, or actually it was in the morning, on a busy Saturday morning. And a man from France had called me. He had just come to Santa Fe to be with his dying father, who had metastatic cancer. And he was vomiting terribly, profusely, and he had tried every medicine in the books, every anti-emetic, everything to try to suppress vomiting, and nothing had helped. And his doctor had even given him medical marijuana to try to suppress the vomiting, but it was not helping. And so he called me, asking me to help his dying father. And as I said, I hadn't completed my training. I didn't have any of my homeopathy books there. I had a room full of patients that needed to be seen, and so I really didn't know what to do. And suddenly, the word ipecac popped into my head. And ipecac, as most of the listeners will know, is used to actually induce vomiting for like children who have swallowed a household poison or something like that. So, but in homeopathic medicine, ipecac, homeopathy is derived, is based on the law of similars, like will be cured by like. So you give the patient a very small amount of a substance that will actually cause the very symptoms that they're complaining of. So I told the son to purchase some homeopathic ipecac at the local health food store. And then I forgot about the patient. I sometimes saw 20 to 40 patients a day at this clinic, and I went and saw my patients and really forgot about the other patient, the son who had called. And a month later, I received a phone call from the son thanking me profusely. He said that the homeopathic ipecac worked like a charm and immediately stopped his father's vomiting. And he thanked me especially because he had come from France, and he was able to spend approximately 1 week of quality time with his dad before he passed on. So that's the first story. The second one has to do with another case of classical homeopathy. That a patient came to me last December of 2001. She was quite distraught because she was told she needed a hysterectomy in 30 days. For severe constipation and severe PMS and pelvic pain that was occurring. The constipation was actually occurring before her menses. For about 7 days, she wasn't having a bowel movement. And she was very distraught. And when her gynecologist told her she needed a hysterectomy, she cried for days, because she also felt that this was not... She did not want to have a hysterectomy, and she felt there might be other alternatives. She had actually heard me on this program when I was a co-host with Carl Robinson a few months ago, actually probably close to a year ago now. And so she contacted my office, and I took her case. And I spend 2 hours with a new patient myself. Well, actually, usually two times 1 hour, because insurance will cover it better that way, but sometimes 2 hours. And I asked her numerous questions about all aspects of her mental, physical, and emotional health, and getting into great detail with homeopathy about what makes her symptoms better, what makes them worse, what time of day is she the most tired, what food cravings and food desires she has, and a lot about the emotional life of the person. This person happened to be in a job that was really not satisfying for her, and she was not happy there. So after this lengthy interview and additional research, some that I often do outside of the patient consultation, I came up with a single homeopathic remedy at a very high potency, which means extremely diluted. It's actually the venom of the Bushmaster snake. And I gave this to her as a single dose, and she did have a minor aggravation, which is expected in homeopathic medicine. And then she came back in 1 month feeling markedly improved. She immediately had, within 48 hours, had began to have normal bowel movements. Her energy, which had been extremely depressed, and she actually had said, when I asked in my new patient consultation, I asked patients to to rate their level of health when they come in. And she actually rated her health at 1 on a scale of 10.
Wow.
And she complained of approximately 16 to 17 symptoms out of 28 that I listed. And so after she came back, she said she was a new person, that her bowels were moving much better. Her energy had increased by 80 to 90%. She was no longer, the pain was virtually gone. And so she had a dramatic response. And I've had to repeat the remedy once in the last 8 months, but overall she continues to be markedly improved. And also she left her job and actually went into the work that she's been wanting to do for many years, and that really is her passion. So homeopathy works on a very holistic level. I'd like to share one other case history of...
Just want to interrupt briefly. We need to remind our audience that this is Sage Health On Call on KUNM 89.9 FM. We encourage you to join our conversation here in the studio with Jeff Solins and Steve Wise talking about integrative medicine. You can call us locally at 277-5866 or 1-877-899-5866. Steve, please continue.
Thanks. I'll share one more story and then pass it on to Jeff. This is a patient. This is a patient I've been seeing for approximately 2 years in my practice, who came to me on disability. He's a reverend, and he has been diagnosed with fibromyalgia and numerous other medical problems. He was on several narcotic medications, and as well as numerous other medications for anxiety and other things. And he was not, as I said, completely disabled when I saw him. And I see him virtually once a week. And it's been a roller coaster in some ways. I mean, it's not been a simple progression of taking him from a state of disability, and he was in constant chronic pain, and his problem list is about 20, in fact, and 20 problems on his problem list. But overall in the last 2 years, we have helped him a great deal, and he's now back to working about 12 to 20 hours a week. And that is having such a positive effect on his emotional life, because not being able to work creates a great deal of distress, and so we're in the process of weaning him off some of his addictive medications that other physicians put him on, and trying a number of different approaches. The thing that seems to help the most is trigger point injections with homeopathic Traumil, which is a trauma remedy. And he comes to me for those once a week, and he gets a great deal of relief from that. We've worked with him on dietary interventions to help his irritable bowel and his peptic ulcer disease, and he's really doing very well in that domain. I'm starting to introduce other...
Steve, I'm going to need to interrupt for just a second. We have a call from Richard in Albuquerque. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if there was anything less traditional to treat hemochromatosis.
We'll refer that one to Jeff, it seems like. Hemochromatosis.
Yes.
Hemochromatosis is a problem with iron storage. And my understanding of that at the time is, other than phlebotomy, I'm not really sure what else someone would do. Clearly, iron has been implemented in the last number of years with increasing risk for coronary disease. So I think that there are some modalities or some problems that you really you need to stick with a conventional Western medicine approach.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Richard.
I mean, I would say add one thing, which is I have not come across any research that in complementary medicine which has convincingly shown that there are other approaches that are effective. I will say that there are a number of approaches, for example, classical homeopathy and traditional Chinese medicine, they don't really require Western medical diagnoses to help patients. And so it would be probably worth a try to try one of these complementary modalities and see if it can help your symptoms. There's no guarantee, but since it's not, it's a Western diagnosis isn't required, meaning with the both classical homeopathy and Chinese medicine, such as acupuncture, treat the patient as a whole, as including all of their numerous symptoms. And each person with hemochromatosis may have a different set of symptoms. And so complementary medicine tries to individualize the treatment to each patient who comes into the office. That's one of the beauties of the complementary approach, I think, which is that it is really truly individual medicine. And so I think if I had this condition, I would give complementary medicine a chance.
Thank you, Richard. We also have another call, Al from Albuquerque.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys are real interesting, and I'm not surprised, but I'm learning a lot, and I appreciate it. Two quick questions. First of all, do you guys practice together?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. In that case, there's only one telephone number, which is my second question.
Our telephone numbers?
Yeah.
Okay. Mine is here in Albuquerque,
505-872-2611.
And this is Dr. Stephen Weiss.
Right. And Jeff Solins, I guess, the Dr. Solins.
Yes, mine is 855.
Oh, it's different. Okay.
855-5545.
5545. And I'm in Albuquerque, and so are you both, I gather.
Yes.
Okay. 872-2611 and 855-5545.
That's right.
Great.
Oh, lots of fives. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Al. And Jeff, you have a comment?
Yeah, Robin, I'd like to use the last gentleman's question as a segue to talk about a couple of issues that I know Steve and I agree on, is that one of the problems that I think that the public needs to recognize is that we use a lot of words rather easily. We say complementary, we say alternative, we say holistic, we say natural, and we say integrative. And I think what's people need to understand is that when somebody comes to Stephen Weiss or they come to myself, they're also coming to someone who has 15 or 20 years of conventional Western medicine background, so that if someone may have certain kinds of problems or symptoms, let's say, with hemochromatosis, and I would agree with Steve, I have no problem sending any of my patients to an integrative or a complementary practitioner. However, Steve also knows what other symptoms to recognize if that treatment isn't working. And my concern is that people sometimes, anybody in this state, probably around the country, can call themselves an integrative physician. And I think patients need to be very, very clear about who they're seeing, why they're seeing them, and what that person's background is, what their education is, what their licensure is, what groups they belong to, because you really can get into a problem. And let me just give you a quick example. And this is sort of a brief story. This was when I was doing straight internal medicine, which I still do, but I wasn't doing any integrative medicine at that time. Had a gentleman who came to me who was about 48 years old. He was a little overweight. He had high cholesterol and he had high blood pressure. He had some tingling in his right arm. And my nurse put him in the room and said, I think probably he has an issue with carpal tunnel syndrome. And so when I first saw the gentleman, I thought, well, this certainly seems reasonable. He's got some tingling in his right arm. It goes down to his hands. And then the other questions that came to me from my internal medicine background, which is I'm sure, initially when Steve sees a patient, probably doesn't do anything much different. I always ask four questions. What do I think the patient has? What's going to kill the patient? What am I going to do to kill the patient? And what drugs are they on? And so what I thought to myself was, could this be an atypical presentation of something more ominous? And because of his being overweight, having high cholesterol, and having high blood pressure, I thought this could be an atypical presentation of angina on the right side instead of the left.
Uh-huh.
We sent him off to the Heart Institute that day, and he was cathed within the next 24 hours. To me, this is one of those kind of real highlight points of where someone could come into an office, complain of something that on the face value looks very straightforward, and they get sent to either a chiropractor or an acupuncturist or a massage therapist for tingling in their arm, which someone thinks is carpal tunnel. If you don't really have an integrative approach to that patient, you're going to miss something like that. And I think that's kind of the downside of not really understanding what it means to practice full integrative medicine. It's a change in the way you think. It's not going to Dr. Weiss or myself as a family practitioner, as an internist, and then saying, well, I think I'll see an acupuncturist, I think I'll see a chiropractor. That's just adding something. Whereas in integrative medicine, Dr. Weiss or myself will call that other practitioner, that acupuncturist or that chiropractor or that Reiki therapist, and say, look, I've got them on some chemotherapy over here as an internist. Steve, if you've got them on a homeopathic preparation, let's really monitor that blood count. We don't want to wait, you know, for 30 days to find out that it dropped out. So I think those are issues that the public really, really needs to be careful about.
Well said. Appreciate it. We do have a caller, Katie from Albuquerque. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
I'm a trained nutritionist, but I have a friend, and I wanted to recommend something to her, but first I wanted to run it by you guys, because I hate to give someone false hope. She's got severe adrenal failure. I mean, it's massive, and I guess it's life-threatening, really. And I had heard many years ago that massive injections of vitamin C IV could help to turn something like that around, and I wondered if you could just discuss that or maybe make recommendations or if you have any ideas.
Just a question for you. I assume then he's been diagnosed with Addison's disease. Is that correct?
I don't know if there's that name, but I believe it's quite similar.
It sounds like it to me if it's life-threatening.
Yeah.
I mean, I will simply say, one of the things that Dr. Weil talked about at our recent conference here at UNM is he talked about the fact that one of the problems with medicine today is that we Western medical doctors will bring out the big guns, the artillery, for many, many diseases and conditions that really don't require it, that could benefit greatly from a much more gentle, holistic approach.
Uh-huh.
But there are about 20% of conditions that really do require the big guns.
Uh-huh.
Now, especially well with this integrative approach of using both medicines.
Mm-hmm.
So Addison's a disease that's life-threatening. I mean, in my practice, I treat adrenal fatigue and adrenal exhaustion all the time, and complementary medicine is very good at helping people who have weakened adrenals.
Right.
But when you get to the state of Addison's, which is really life-threatening, then you have to be careful. And this is what Jeff was talking about seeing a physician that has both knowledge of both in both areas, because really, if you just put somebody on an adrenal glandular, for example, or even high doses of vitamin C, and you're not careful, you could greatly harm or not kill the patient.
Mm.
So I think I've not seen any research myself of IV vitamin C being effective in Addison's disease. I don't know if you have, Jeff.
No, I haven't either.
Mm-hmm. So
is that something that has some alternative treatment?
The Addison's?
Yeah.
Well, again, I would say my approach at this point would be to use both medicines, and would be to actually have an endocrinologist probably work with the patient and get him stabilized on steroids, for example, because prednisone,
mm-hmm.
is totally life-saving in this condition.
Mm-hmm.
And then work as well. You could potentially do IV vitamin C alongside the steroids, or you could do other things to try to help the patient. But unfortunately, the steroids are going to be suppressing the adrenal glands even further.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of in a quandary here. But it's a challenging situation. But I think this is a good example of where if you just use a complementary approach, you could actually, the patient could die.
Okay.
The other thing that I might comment on, and this has been one thing that I've been proud of with Bridges, one of the things that I learned to say a lot is, I don't know. And one of the nice things about working in the team setting is that, and I certainly concur with Steve, he needs a really good endocrinologist. He's going to need the steroids. However, if with a patient like this, you know, my concern would be I would probably assemble a team where I had, let's say, Oriental medicine who can basically help work with the immune system. I'd probably have a nutritionist who could help with diet. And there may be issues with meditation. And even modalities like yoga, which have an effect on internally massaging the internal organs. So,
is it something that can be recovered from?
It depends what the adrenals are burned out from. If it's truly Addison's disease and there's been a virus, or in the old days it used to be tuberculosis, if there's a problem like that, in a conventional Western medicine, I'd have to say I've never seen it recover. I've also seen enough with integrative medicine that I've also learned to say, I don't know. And so I don't take that hope away from a patient. I've seen some miracles, and I continue to hope that I'll see them in the future. So he may be one of the miracles.
Thank you for calling, Katie.
I concur with Jeff here about certainly using these complementary approaches and also never taking hope away from the patient. And perhaps, you know, my goal in my practice would be to start to use some alternative approaches such as classical homeopathy, possibly acupuncture and others, and diet, to try to perhaps wean him down from his high dose of steroids, try to get him to the lowest dose of steroids, and possibly get him off steroids, certainly would be the goal. But, yeah.
We do have another caller, Susan from Hemis. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello, Susan.
Hi. I'm really pleased to hear your program. I'm a massage therapist with a background in allopathic medicine, and I find it really interesting in my own practice that people come in with problems that are real clinical pathologies, and I always refer them out to physicians. There is a somewhat of a confusion, I think, in the alternative medical community, and a distrust and a dislike of allopathic medicines, and I'm glad to hear you guys talk so broadly, have such a broad base in your practice. It sounds like a really, really wonderful balanced approach to treating the patient.
Well, thank you, Susan. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
Susan.
We have another caller, Michael from Albuquerque. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask, where can someone get intravenous vitamin C for conditions that require it?
There are a couple of... I don't actually offer this in my practice. I don't know if you do, Jeff.
I don't either.
Yeah. There's a Dr. Ralph Luciani here in Albuquerque, an osteopathic physician who offers intravenous vitamins. Where are you located?
Albuquerque.
So he would probably be the best person for you to see.
Are there others as well?
I don't know about Dr. Aaron Kaufman, if he does that or not. He's another integrative practitioner. You could check his office. Let's see. Anyone else in Albuquerque? I'm not aware of any, but I know some people up in Santa Fe that do. Would you like those names?
Please.
Sure. Dr. Erica Elliott up in Santa Fe. And also, let's see. I don't know. There may be one other whose name I'm not recollecting at this moment. He does alternative kinds of allergy.
Dr. Schrader?
Schrader. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for calling, Michael. Well, Steve, before the calls came in, we were talking about the Reverend and fibromyalgia. Is it possible to go back and finish up that story?
Sure. So, as I said, there's been ups and downs. It has not been a linear approach to health and well-being, but I would say overall in the last 2 years we've made substantial progress. And he specifically thanked me for being one of the only physicians that has decided to stay with him through his difficulties and to be there for him and to use many different approaches to help him, and not just to slap a drug in front of him or a prescription and say, you know, in 5 minutes. We often spend 1 hour together, we're able to discuss emotional and spiritual aspects to his healing, as well as one by one whittle away at the numerous physical complaints that he has. And so I've used a combination of I continue him. He's still taking a number of Western drugs, but he's also on various nutraceuticals and vitamins and minerals. He takes magnesium. He takes deglycyrrhizinated licorice for his ulcer. He is doing a number of self-help kinds of techniques, such as meditation and self-hypnosis to help cope with the pain. He's seeing a great physical therapist in town, Terry Kern, and is doing myofascial release work with him. He's seeing a psychotherapist in town. So we have him on a very, very an integrative approach, and it's really helping him in many ways.
Wonderful. Well, I'm glad we got a chance to finish the story to wrap things up.
Thanks.
We have another caller, Arlene from Española. Arlene, you're on the air.
Hi, doctor. Right. I'm wondering if there's anything that can be done for someone who has congestive heart failure.
Yes, there is. Maybe, Jeff, would you like to start with that?
Well, there are a number of kinds of products, actually, from a supplement standpoint. One of those is CoQ10.
What is that?
It's called CoQ10. However, let me be very clear. I could get 12 cardiologists in the room with us today, and six would tell me that I'm right on, and six would tell me to walk out the door. There are hardcore studies on CoQ10, but it's the issue becomes one of the quality of the product. You don't want to just go to a local food store or even one of the local health food stores and just pick up what you find on the shelf. There have been studies on specific brands of this particular product. The person needs to have a blood level drawn before you start them. And you really need to be able to have a cardiologist monitoring this with the internist. You don't want to just go to someone who says, take some CoQ10 and call me back in a few weeks. There's also Hawthorn, which can be used. And in terms of a more spiritual approach to heart failure, it's very, very clear that issues like depression and group support, music, have all been modalities that have been studied with heart failure. And in fact, the Heart Institute, interestingly enough, New Mexico Heart Institute, this Wednesday on the 16th, I will be discussing integrative medicine for the heart along with a very fine lady and friend who plays harp at the New Mexico Heart Institute. Now, 3 or 4 years ago, if you had talked about having a harpist at one of the most high-tech cardiac facilities in the country, people probably would have laughed.
And you're going to do this on the 16th where and what
it's,
time?
It's called the Jewish Community Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's on Wednesday the 16th at 6 p.m.
Okay. So, well, this woman is a cellist, and she has had to quit playing with the symphony because she no longer has the energy to play. So, you know, musically, she's been there.
Well, that's really kind of, I mean, it's not a beautiful story that she has heart failure, but in conjunction with the fact that I'm going to be doing this talk with someone who's playing harp at the Heart Hospital.
How appropriate.
I'm not trying to solicit patients, but if for no other reason, I'd probably just enjoy talking with her because there may be some people I could have her talk to who would be helpful spiritually and emotionally. I don't know at what level her heart failure, at what level she is. You know, there's various classes, 1 through 4, and so I need to have a better understanding of that and would have to talk to her cardiologist. But I think that there's some hope and some help out there for her.
Thank you.
Yeah. Those are the two substances that Jeff described, the Hawthorn and CoQ10, are the ones that are best researched. I would agree with you, Jeff. You know, it depends also what the cause of the heart failure is. And there are many different causes of heart failure. If she has coronary artery disease causing this, then of course there's a whole other level of treatment that can be directed at the coronary artery disease, which is blocked coronary arteries or plaque. And of course, the Dean Ornish program is very useful for reversing heart disease. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but he's written a book called Reversing Heart Disease, and it's actually using meditation and exercise and a very low fat diet. So, and he's also written a book about the role of love in heart health, and a very interesting book there. So, you know, we would get in, you'd also want to work on some emotional issues, what's causing, whether there's the person is experiencing love in their life and really letting the love in completely.
We have another caller, Larry Horton from Tejeras. Mm-hmm. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
I'm doing well. How
Hi,
are
Larry.
You?
Great. I'm enjoying your show very much. I had a couple of things that I wanted to offer. One was in regard to IV nutrients. I practice Oriental medicine in Albuquerque, and I offer IV nutrients as well. So I just wanted to toss that out. The other thing was a story, Jeff's story about, the thing behind it was being able to access conventional medicine and possibly prevent serious mishaps that might not be taken care of with an alternative practitioner. And My story involves a colleague of mine who is practicing Oriental medicine in Santa Fe, and he had a new patient come in who was experiencing pain, and he was trying to read pulses in the lower part of the body, and he couldn't find any pulses in the lower part of the body. And to him, this was of major significance, and he sent him off to the man's primary healthcare physician, saying that, you know, you need to get to an emergency room and you need to see a specialist right away. And in this case, the primary healthcare physician decided that there was no problem here at all. And this man, who was a 40-year-old patient, was dead within 24 hours from an aortic blockage. So, you know, I just wanted to toss that out to say that there are, you know, there are just such major forces out there that are bigger than just who we choose to go see in these events that happen in our lives, and it can go both directions.
Yeah. Larry, how are you? This is Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
So there's a couple comments I have, and I think the first word that comes to my mind really is communication, and that goes back to the definition I tried to give a little bit earlier about talking about integration. I think that for those who know you and for those who don't, I mean, you're a very well-qualified doctor of Oriental medicine, and obviously we've known each other for many years. I think my point was a little bit more about the public going to people who perhaps they don't ask what their background is, what their licensure is. I mean, In my mind anymore, I almost don't consider Oriental medicine or chiropractic as being alternative or complementary. You're part of the mainstream just like the rest of us. But you also have governing bodies. You have boards. You have national licensure. You have state licensure. In this state, anybody, for instance, and this is no, this is not to demean someone who is certified in this area, but in New Mexico, someone can call themselves a naturopathic physician and have had a weekend course. There's only three schools in the country that certify naturopathic physicians, and unfortunately, I think New Mexico doesn't recognize that and doesn't have licensure for that.
Right.
I think that they should, but I think the important issue that you brought up, and I'm, you know, it's not a good story about the man who died, but it brings up a good point, is that when two practitioners can get on the telephone, I don't care if someone does iridology, if they'll at least call me and say, look, I saw something in the person's eye grounds, then I will at least listen to it and decide if we need to do something else. I think what happens is when people get shifted around and no one wants to pick up a phone and talk to the other person, that's the greatest harm to the patient.
I absolutely agree, Jeff. You know, we all need to be working together. And I really appreciate this particular show and the effort you guys are making.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks for calling, Larry.
All right. Thank you, Robin. Bye-bye.
This is a wonderful segue, of course, into the Symposium of Integrative Medicine Professionals in the Land of Enchantment that happened here recently in Albuquerque. It was October 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Albuquerque Hilton. And some of the categories of areas that were presented were healing traditions in New Mexico, models of integrative care in New Mexico, integrative medicine and medical education, research in integrative medicine. And both Steve and Jeff were speakers at this conference. Could you tell us what your talks were about and what was your reaction to the conference?
Sure. I'll start. The title of my talk was, this is Stephen Weiss, Walking the Tightrope, The Joys and Challenges of an Integrative Medical Practice. So as you mentioned, we were both Jeff and I were speaking under under models of integrative care in New Mexico. So they wanted us to talk a little bit about our practices and what we do. So I use the tightrope analogy because I feel that what we do is both extremely challenging in trying to mix the left and the right brain, really. We're trying to mix intuition as well as intellect in our practices. And also because there have been challenges throughout the last 20 to 25 years. I mean, many years ago, about 10 to 15 years ago even, holistic or complementary or integrative doctors, as we now call ourselves, lost their licenses for the simple fact that they practiced this type of medicine. And there was a very hostile environment, which has changed greatly in the last 10 years. And in my talk, I mentioned that both Andrew Weil and David Eisenberg, who were speakers at this conference, were major players in the in the huge transformation that has taken place in the last decade. So I also talked about I talked about two key experiences in medical school that really shaped me, and that set me off on the path that I now found myself. One of them happened to be this spiritual healer that came to the University of Maryland that actually Jeff has also met. And she was a grandmother who was very endearing, and she talked to the family practice department back in 1984, and she started she's an intuitive clairvoyant, and she told us who's actually world renowned spiritual healer. She studied at the University of Tokyo, at UCLA, and the Georgia Institute of Technology. It was found that she could affect the waves inside a cloud chamber at a distance of 600 miles, that her intention and her energy field could affect the cloud chamber of 600 miles away. Anyway, she began talking to us about beasties, which are these spirits of dead relatives that she could contact and who would actually greatly help the patients that came to her for healing. The kind of communication she had with these deceased relatives helped Olga Worrell is her name, to help heal and greatly impact the lives of the patients that were coming to heal her, for healing, sorry.
Just need to briefly interrupt. Ron, we have a call. Ron is from White Oaks, Ruidoso. Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm enjoying your show. And I like the fact that everybody is sort of being respectful of the other disciplines that are out there in the healthcare industry. I have a question regarding herbal medicine. One of you mentioned some background in Ayurvedic medicine. I don't know if that was your own background or you just have Ayurvedic people that you deal with. But the question is, someone who knows something about Ayurvedic medicine has a completely different outlook about prescribing herbs than someone who is into Western herbology. How do you deal with those two? In my mind, they're almost opposing views about how to use herbs.
Yeah, it's a good question. This is Stephen Weiss again. I actually came to Albuquerque in 1991 to study Ayurvedic medicine with Dr. Vasant Lad, and I took his program in Ayurvedic medicine. And it is, I will say that, Ayurveda is a vast field, and in India it's a four-year training program, and in the United States it's a lot less. And so I've used Ayurveda predominantly to, especially if there's a case that really stands out that is either vata, which is air derangement, or fire derangement, or water, earth, which is kapha derangement. If there's a patient that really stands out to have one of these imbalances, I will especially use diet and lifestyle counseling and sometimes meditation and other spiritual practices to help balance them. I don't so much use Ayurvedic herbs in my practice.
Okay.
Thank you for your call, Ron. And Steve, please continue with your...
Okay, I'll be brief because I know we're running out of time here. Basically, so that was Olga Worrell, and I ended up doing an elective, actually submitting a proposal for an elective to study her at her church, at the Mount Washington Methodist Church, and was able to write a very interesting paper on her work and read some of the books that were written about her and by her and her husband. And then I also, when I was a junior medical student and feeling somewhat depressed and very overworked and underslept, I was able to go to a wonderful conference, the American Medical Students Association conference, the first one, which took place in Crystal City, Virginia, of all places. And as I walked in, as I said in my talk, as I walked in and I heard this long-haired doctor speaking, whom most, if not all, of the listeners have heard of. And it was extremely inspiring because this man was just totally doing his life's work and totally passionate about his work. And this man is Patch Adams. And I said that my spirit was buried on the sixth floor of University Hospital was resurrected during that talk because I just received so much inspiration from him. So anyway, I also talked a little bit about my practice and some of the things that work in my practice, some of the things that I think aren't working, and I passed that on to other integrative medicine professionals about. And also how to incorporate spirituality into my practice or into holistic medicine. I'd simply like to mention that I'm going to be offering a free 6-week series called Returning to Wholeness at my practice. It's going to be free, and it's going to be on Tuesdays from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Beginning Tuesday, November 7th.
Great. Thank you. Jeff, could you summarize your talk at the symposium for us, please?
Well, the title of my talk was Bridges in Medicine, Bringing Heaven Down to Earth, and I think Steve gave a nice segue here. When I talk and lecture, one of the things I like to talk about is that basically it's all about healing. And I use this one phrase which says, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Bridges in Medicine was started really to find my own soul in medicine. I think that we've lost touch. I think that the healers need to be healed before we're out there healing other people. I would also just go back a moment and say that one of the great things about the conference that I don't think a lot of people always recognize when they see Time magazine with Andy Weil on the cover is that Andy Weil and David Eisenberg are all, these guys are MDs, they're scientists, they're looking for hardcore research, but their minds are open to looking at alternative or different ways of viewing the world, but they're not out there doing loose kinds of medicine. They really are very, very focused and very, very specific people. One, just a very quick story, which I'll end with, that I talked about at the conference, which is about spirituality. There were three scientists, and I'll just say that they were from Sandia Labs, and they were out there kind of mumbling. And so God was listening, and this is not meant to be a religious comment here. It's spiritual. So God said, hey, what are you guys talking about? And they said, well, you know, we're just sort of hacking around talking. He said, well, like what? And they said, well, you know, we know genomics, and we do a cloning now, and God's listening. And he says, well, so you guys think you don't need me anymore, huh? And they said, well, we didn't say that. And he said, oh, no, but, you know, I'm God. I know what you're thinking. He said, so look, why don't we have a contest? And the scientists, right away, they liked that. And they said, good, what do you want to do? He said, let's do something with creation. So these three guys get together, and they said, fine, we're on. So they walk over to this kind of swampy area where the pampas grass is growing. They dig way down into the mud. They pick it up, and they look at it, and they say, well, it's got carbon, hydrogen. It's got nitrogen. It's got algae. And all of a sudden, this voice goes, ho, ho, hey, wait a minute, wait a minute. Get your own mud.
I like it. Well, we do have a good summary here in terms of the various aspects that we've encountered both through the symposium and through integrative medical practices. Steve, you have a final comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, I'd just like to make one final comment following what Jeff just said and something that Dr. Andrew Weil mentioned at the conference. And he talked about paradigm shifts. And there's a book out by Mr. Kuhn, The Structures of Scientific Revolutions. Basically, integrative medicine is undergoing, our society is going through a paradigm shift from this classical Newtonian type of medicine to a new type of medicine that incorporates spirituality, incorporates wholeness and oneness. And a lot of conventional doctors are not really, afraid of this. And so we really need to begin to broaden our perspectives, open our minds to many of the
I'm afraid I'm going to have to interrupt you here. We're going to have to at least give a thanks to our guests, Dr. Stephen Weiss and Jeff Solins, for their discussions about their own integrative medical practices. And thanks to the KUM engineer, Todd, and KUNM's news director, Marcus Martinez, for being executive producer of our show. Next month's show will be Sunday, November 10th at 11 a.m., and our topic will be the lesser-known aspects of Oriental medicine. Thanks, and best of health to you all. Mm-hmm.